Eric Story joins me now. Hi, Eric.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Eric Story, you have a debut novel that's just been published. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's called Nothing Short of Dying. It's a crime thriller set in Western Colorado, which is really cool to see local places in a book.
Yeah, especially one that came out from New York. It's pretty exciting.
Yes, it is. How would you describe Nothing Short of Dying for our listeners?
That's the story of a rugged adventurer who comes back to the States after getting out of prison, comes back to this part of the country, and finds out his sister's in trouble. So he goes to rescue her. I guess that's the main plot.
Uh-huh. Well, let's talk about Clyde Barr. That's the person you're talking about. Clyde Barr just had gotten out of prison in Mexico on his way to UConn because he doesn't like civilization?
Yes. Yeah, he's sick of civilization. He's never really liked it. He's a lot more comfortable around a campfire than he is, you know, doing radio interviews or those type of things.
So Clyde Barr is in some sense yourself.
Yeah, those things, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And as you said, he gets a phone call from his sister around the campfire, as a matter of fact.
True.
One literary critic called Clyde, quote, skilled, loyal, tough, and beautifully broken.
Yeah, he's broken, that's for sure.
What broke Clyde Barr?
Kept going to the third world countries and some of the developing nations and saw how rough life is there. He tried to help, but every time he tried to help in one of those countries, he ended up getting pulled into some nasty conflict, and I think he's just seen too much of it. And then when his sister gets in trouble, and it's kind of the similar situation here, it's enough to really push him to do whatever it takes to get her back.
So he got a call from her at a number he didn't recognize, so he had no idea where she was.
Correct.
And he had to go find her.
Right. So there's a little bit of the mystery search for her.
And to do that, he draws on some of his old friends and some of his contacts, some of which may be less than savory.
True. One of them was a cellmate when he was in prison in Mexico, and he's a interesting character, we'll put it that way.
Uh-huh.
He was fun to write. He's a very rough, scary character.
So there's a backstory with Clyde Barr and his sister Jen, and we won't outline that now because we certainly don't want to spoil it.
True. Yeah, you should read it.
You should. And it's a real page turner, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
But I think that draws on a pretty crucial part of Clyde's character, and that's his loyalty to family.
True. Yeah. He'll do whatever it takes to help his sisters that he did when he was younger, growing up. And then when he comes back, he does it again.
Yeah. The guy just never says, he never quits. Clyde Barr never quits, does he?
I mean, no matter how many times he's knocked down, he just keeps getting back up.
Or shot.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it was almost like I found myself thinking of Achilles.
Uh-huh.
You know, who rampages across the battlefield, seemingly untouched by anything.
Right.
And I kind of got that sense. I mean, he dispatched, at least 20 people in a couple of those scenes.
Yeah, probably the first 30 pages of the book, I think. There's that many people out.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's kind of what he is. He's one of those traditional heroes that even follows the same archetype as a lot of those wandering tough heroes like Achilles and some of the old Ronins and the knight errants, you know, I think he mentions that a couple times, some of the other knights that would be impressed by what he was doing, he thought.
You know, I'm a big fan of C.J. Box, and C.J. Box kind of carved out his territory up in Wyoming and made it pretty exotic.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm thinking of Nate Romanowski, for instance. I didn't see any comparable figure yet in your book, but I'm wondering if that was sort of a conscious thing to set the novel in there's nobody else writing detective novels in Western Colorado.
True. Yeah, and that's what I wanted. There's not very many at all in the Intermountain West, really. Wyoming, there's, you know, C.J. Box and Craig Johnson, but between the Rockies and the Sierras, there's all this space that you could put a character in and have him do a lot of things, but nobody writes about it. And it's some of my favorite country. You know, I grew up in this area. There's so much to room for them to move, and so many beautiful things to write about.
I was struck by the fact that the Joe Pickett novels by C.J. Box. Joe Pickett's pretty much a Boy Scout, but I wouldn't call Clyde Barr a Boy Scout.
No, he's kind of the rougher anti-hero. He's more in the Pickett ones. He's more like Nate than he would be Joe.
Yeah, yeah, but not quite that spiritual edge that Nate.
No, and he doesn't falcon. He doesn't even like birds. So,
so you were quoted as saying there was a giant block of gross granite that I had to chip at to get Clyde. What did you mean by that?
Well, I was a huge fan growing up of Travis McGee books, and I wanted kind of a Western Travis McGee, and I started, I don't know, 8 years ago writing stuff with a similar character, but it took actually all those years until about 4 years ago before I had a Clyde character that he is now. It took a lot of rewrites. I don't know, 50 or so total rewrites before we
50 rewrites.
Yeah, before I had this Clyde.
This is your first, but I noticed that you've already got one or two more in the can. Is that right?
One in the can, yeah. Now, yeah. We're in the midst of edits that it's supposed to be doing right now. So.
Well, you've mentioned you're growing up just a little bit already, but I want to dive into that a little bit deeper. You grew up in Rangeley.
True, yes.
Wow, I've never met anybody that grew up in Rangeley. There must be just 1,000 people that can say that.
Yeah, there's not very many.
Not very many. Tell me about Rangeley. How did that shape you as a person and as a writer?
Definitely made me a writer.
How so?
Because there was nothing else to do other than go outside and roam. There's 50 miles of public land in every direction, but there's nothing in town. So it's either go out and play or stay at home and read. My parents were big readers. I haunted the library. The librarians are like ants to me. They all know my name still. So that much reading and that much spending out time outside thinking about what I was reading, I think, made me a writer.
And what you were reading was genre fiction?
Yeah, but all pretty genres. Yeah. I started mostly with sci-fi and fantasy.
Oh, really?
Huh. My dad always read Westerns. My mom always read mysteries. So they were laying around, too, and I picked those up. So
one summer you read every Louis L'Amour book?
Yes, I did.
How about that?
60-something books.
How about that? And I also read that you spent a lot of time reading by lantern light in a cabin in the Flat Tops. Is that where that was?
Yeah. When I was a lot younger, my parents had a friend that had a cabin grandfathered into the Flat Tops Wilderness. So we'd ride or hike up in there and stay most of the summer. That's actually where I learned to ride a horse before I learned to ride a bike.
How about that?
Yeah. And then later, we took control of my great-grandfather's homestead up Piance Creek between Rifle and Meeker. And then we spent every summer up there.
And so growing up in Rangeley, did you run across a teacher that encouraged this tendency to read and write? How did the writing bug bite you?
I always kind of wrote, kept journals, but I was more of a reader than anything until there's a couple teachers in high school that pushed me to keep reading and try to write something. And then college, they had actually in Colorado Mountain College in Leadville.
Oh, really?
Mr. Cummings, who's no longer with us, but he said, you have to start selling some of these stories. And it wasn't a question. He told me I had to. So I went, and that's where I really started, I think.
So how did you do that? How did you start publishing your stories? How did you start getting out there? Did you start with websites?
No, I started. That was so long ago. I started with those old novel and short story publication books, I guess. It had lists of places that were buying short stories. And then later, yeah, there's a website called Duotrope that has all the places that buy short stories. And that's where I went to sell them.
What's that called?
Duotrope.
Duotrope.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to check that out. Duotrope. And I noticed that like every other budding author, had your share of rejections.
Oh yeah, plenty. I stopped counting at 50. My wife said there was 60 something. That was just for agents.
But then one day you got a call from England. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that was a very interesting day, just because I'd sent it to everyone that I could think of, and then got rejected from every New York person that I sent to. And thought, well, maybe let's try as a last resort somebody that'll never, that, you know, that's going to say no. But it's a huge agent, and they have, he represents a character or a writer that has a character similar to mine. So I just gave it a shot, and I had to send it. Most agents, you send email now, and he didn't. He wanted actual post. So I had to send it with our last $9 by post as a last resort. And I still thought there would that phone call would never come. So when it did, and it was Darley Anderson from London saying, I kind of like this, so I want to read the rest of the book. I dropped the phone. My wife thought it was so horrible. You know, somebody has cancer call. It was a life changer.
Huh. So he read it. He liked it. What happened then?
Then he took me on as a client, and then started shipping or trying to sell it. And that it took a long time too. Even though he's one of the best agents in the world, it was hard to sell at first too. Until he found this brilliant editor in New York, who helped me work it to where it is now. It was a lot different even when we were trying to sell it the first time.
Tell me about that process, working with your editor. Did you at any point along the process, along the way, find it necessary to say, I'm not going to do that? That's going to compromise my story. Or did you take everything he said to heart?
Almost everything he said, yeah. And the things that I didn't want to change were really minute, because it's a commercial book. It's commercial fiction. So I kind of thought of him more as like an Olympic coach. He's helping me get better. It was more of a learning process than it was a battle. Some writers do have that mentality when they work with their agent, like this is constant war. But I look at it more as a coach, athlete type of situation.
Oh, well, that makes sense, especially since you're a newbie, you know.
Yeah.
Those people have more experience in the field than you, for sure.
Yeah, and he's published 80 bestsellers, so I really can't, or he's edited 80 bestsellers, so I really can't argue with him much.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But I guess maybe after you have 5 of them under your belt, you can say, oh, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
Especially if they sell. How long has it been out, the book?
Since August.
August.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and are the sales figures encouraging?
I haven't checked.
Oh, you haven't even checked?
I don't keep track.
How about that?
I'm trying to work on this next one so much that it would be distracting.
So did you get an advance against future royalties? Is that the way it worked?
For 2 books, yeah.
For 2 books.
Mm-hmm.
I see. So after 2 books, you can move elsewhere if you want.
Right.
Uh-huh. Or if they want, or
yeah.
Demand.
And okay. They have first right of refusal on the third. If they want it, they can get it, but huh. And I love working with Rick, this editor, so I wouldn't mind if they take the third one.
So is it the classic story of you got that advance and you were able to quit your day job, which I understand you had a lot of day jobs over the years?
Yeah, just about everything.
Uh-huh. Including mushing dogs up in Wyoming.
Yep. And horseback tours and steamboat and a janitor, truck driver, bartender, all, you know, the normal blue collar, mostly seasonal jobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it wasn't enough to quit my day job, but I still work seasonally.
Do you?
But it wasn't enough for us to move. We finally moved out of Rangeley to Grand Junction, the big city, you know.
Right.
Living it up.
Right. So you moved from Rangeley to Grand Junction. How about that? Well, I love the acknowledgments in your book. I really want to point this out to some of our listeners here. First of all, you thank your parents for teaching you to love reading and to work hard. How cool is that?
It's true.
You also mentioned a couple of the teachers along the way, mm-hmm. in your acknowledgments, and you said, I promised you'd be mentioned in here if this ever happened, and I didn't forget. Gotta love that. And then also your wife and your daughters, of course. But here's the kicker, at least from my perspective. To readers everywhere, you are a dwindling and unique breed, and I thank you for trading money and time to enjoy books when there are so many other things competing for your attention.
It's very true nowadays.
Huh. Do you have a Kindle?
I do.
You do?
Because my wife encouraged me to get one because we're running out of room. We had a smaller house, and we were running out of room for physical books. And I couldn't stop buying them. So she bought me a Kindle for Christmas and said, hey, you can put hundreds of them on here and it doesn't take up any space.
Nice. How about that? Well, you know, I really have to hand it to you for keeping your head screwed on right and acknowledging the people in your life that, you know, brought you to this point. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you can't do it on your own.
Yeah. Well, I bet your wife was a big part of that.
Huge. That's why the book's dedicated to her.
Uh-huh.
For that reason. I couldn't. She's actually with me today through with all this touring. She's been with me on the whole tour because she the book would have never been written without her.
Uh-huh. Where else are you touring?
Well, we had toured Phoenix, Dallas, New Orleans. Okay, I can't remember where else we went.
Wow. That's
Denver, Fort Collins, and Boulder.
That's really exciting.
Yeah.
Get to go to those places. Now, when you tour, you're giving readings, public readings?
Readings and a little bit of a speech and then question and answer and then some signings.
Well, that tour brings you to the Rifle Branch Library tonight at 6 p.m. So our listeners have a chance to get a look at your book and hear kind of what it's about.
Yeah, I'll explain how it came to be and who Clyde is for those that haven't read it. Hopefully you have, but either way, come on down.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Eric Story, I want to thank you for joining us here at KDNK, and best of luck to you.
All right, thank you very much.